Accession number 20935, reel 1.
Les Gibson, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Newcastle upon Tyne.
Which year was this?
February 25.
Did your mother and father both come from Newcastle?
Yes.
What did your father do for a living?
He worked in, he was an engineering factory. I think it was a slotter they called his trade, a slotter.
Did you grow up and have your schooling at Newcastle?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that was just before war started?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes.
As?
I was an apprentice butcher.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did.
What did you feel about that?
Well, the age of 14, you don't know what to think, really. But I know I had a stepfather at the time. He was very concerned about it. Because we was, I think it was a Sunday morning, we was listening to the radio, the old radio. And everybody, you know, he went white in the face, the stepfather.
Did the war affect you at first?
Not really.
Were you not in any bombing by the German Air Force?
Not at Newcastle.
What was your address in Newcastle?
I lived in, I think I'm forgot now because it's so many years since I lived there. I think it was 16 Greenford Road. There was a gas tank opposite, which did get hit one night. And the firemen came and they were swinging bags from above the where the hole was, and the flames were coming out. They were swinging the bags to try and put the flames out, which they did at the finish.
How close to you was that?
Probably about 200 yards.
Were you in the house at the time?
Yeah, I was in bed.
How frightening was that?
It was very frightening. Very frightening.
Any other bombing experiences that you had?
Well, being an apprentice butcher, my job on the Monday morning was to clean the rails in the shop window and do a lot of scrubbing up and that. Well, this morning I had changed my job. I got a job with the butchers round the corner. And at the time, the butcher's shop was near the naval shipyard. And I should have been really standing in the window cleaning the rails with the emery paper. And there was a bullet come through the window, through the framework of the window, and smashed in the rails where I should have been. I didn't know this till I visited the shop one day and the old chap told me about it.
Did Newcastle get bombed very much when you were there?
No, there wasn't much bombed. It was more or less strafing of the shipyards because they built a lot of naval ships there.
What was the name of the part of Newcastle where you lived?
At that time it was Walker.
Did you stay at the same job?
Yes, I was a butcher until I was called up.
When was that?
July 43.
Yes.
Yeah, July 43.
Can you tell me about joining up, please? What you remember about that?
Yes, when I got the notification, I had to report to Carlisle Drill Hall. And I also was accompanied by my friend Bill Hammond, who I later found out had been killed in Holland, killed by a sniper. We reported to the drill hall. There was quite a lot of chaps there. It was beds all sort of crushed together, and we had to stay there for about a week until we got accommodation in the castle. And we got issued with our uniforms and that sort of thing. And then the training started. It was pretty rigorous training, very disciplined. I remember one day I'd had a haircut, and I had a haircut that morning, and the next day we was going out to visit the town, and of course you had to march smartly across the barrack square, and the provost sergeant shouted to me, "Come over here, soldier." And he said to me, "Am I hurting you?" And I said, "No, sergeant." He said, "Well, I'm standing on your bloody hair." And I said, "Well, sergeant, I've just had a cut there. I've just had a cut." He said, "Well, you go and get a cut again," he said. And after that, we proceeded to have a walk around the town.
This is New Carlisle.
Carlisle Castle, yeah. And then after that, we were sent to a camp called Durran Hill, where we started to learn field craft. And Durran Hill was where we learned lots of field craft and that sort of thing. We had a Corporal Smith who taught us the small arms, Bren guns and that. I remember one day I said to the Corporal, I said, "When are we going to get our guns?" And he said, "They're not bloody guns, they're rifles," he says. Which, you know, being a bit green, we didn't know what was what sort of thing, you know. But that was very intensive. We finished up doing 20-mile force route marches, coming back, going over the assault course. I learned a bit of boxing there. We used to do training in the gym, and they'd get about 40 chaps, 20 with vests on, 20 without vests on, all had boxing gloves on, put you in a circle, and the first team who had more people left in the ring was the winners. And of course, sometimes you're fighting about 6 men at one time, which I think toughened us up a bit. Yeah, we used to go running 5-mile runs and that, you know. That's where we really fitted up, because by the time we was finished, we were, you could say, athletes, because the instructor in the gym used to get us to lie on the floor and he'd run across our stomachs. But we were really fit then.
And then?
And then when I finished my GSC training, I was posted to Air Race Course, which was occupied by the 6th Battalion Border Regiment. We'd done more field training there, and then we were preparing to be a beach group for the D-Day landings. We were 10 beach group. And our first beach landing was up in Gallane in Scotland in the height of winter. We were dug in at the sea edge for about 8 days, and a lot of the chaps suffered from hypothermia. And in the battalion newspaper it said that we were the first, it's the first time the regiment had seen the three S's, which is sea, sand and snow. And it was very, very cold up there, very cold.
Were there any other units up with you there?
No, there was. At that part of the beach landings, there was just the 6th Border Regiment.
What was the morale amongst the troops like at Gallane?
Well, it was fed up, you know. I mean, you're living in a hole near the right on the edge of the sea for 8 days. It's, you know, very, very cold it was.
Did any of them fall out through illness?
Yes, a lot of them had this hypothermia when in the hospital. But I was quite lucky. I kept myself well wrapped up in that.
What happened next?
After we finished the exercise, we went back to the air race course, and a short time later, we were transported down to the New Forest at Brockenhurst. When we got there, the was more or less just a forest, and we had to hack our way through bushes and erect these the old type bell tents. The tents were a bit crowded. 12 men in a tent with their feet all towards the support post in the middle, plus your equipment. Rather awkward during the night to go to the toilet. You had to do more or less a sword dance in between the legs. And we still carried on with the training, and a short while later we started doing beach landings down on the coast there near Southampton. We used to go down and get on the landing craft and that, go out into the channel, come back to a landing, quite realistic with these gun cotton and that exploding on the beaches. And we had a commando company attached to us.
From which commando?
47. And they're quite realistic. They had brain guns firing on fixed lines and this sort of thing, you know. And we'd done about three of these landings whilst we were there. The funny thing was, when we used to be transported on the 3-ton trucks to the docks, lots of people congregated around there, and some of them had tears in their eyes, thinking this was the invasion, you know. So, and that was it. We'd done about three landings, and then the next thing was Overlord.
Did you get any VIP visits whilst you were?
Yes, General Eisenhower visited us, gave us a speech, and they made a platform on a jeep, and I remember the first sentence, which he said something about, "You guys will do all the fighting." He says, "You'll have the best support, the best equipment, you know." And I thought, we could have done with that in the forest, you know, before we went over there. Although we did have good food, because we had the Americans cooking for us there, and we had the old American dish where there's about 12 different compartments and everything's just slapped in each compartment, you know. And we used to get eggs and bacon for breakfast of a morning, and new bread. And I remember one of the Yanks saying, "Yeah, we're fattening you up for the kill," you know, in a joking manner. But that was it. And when we knew that the invasion was imminent, they closed all the gates, and they had guards all around the area, you know. We were shown photos of the actual beach we would land on. One of them showed a German soldier laying mines on the beach. And we were issued with French francs. And then the next thing it was to leave the camp, and I was on an LCT, Landcraft tank. We left the docks, and we were moored just outside the Isle of Wight. This was on about, I think it was the 30th of May or 31st. We was on the craft for about 5 days before we actually made off to Normandy. I remember looking over to the Isle of Wight and seeing a lovely house there, and I thought, God, I'd love to be in there at this moment, you know. And we were next to the this thing they called Pluto. It was the pipeline under the ocean. We was actually right near that, you know. And it was very boring being stuck on a flat bottomed landing craft tank, you know, all that time. And we were supposed to do the landing on the 5th of June, but due to the weather, which was very bad, it was cancelled. And Eisenhower gave the orders the next day, let's go. And we just went to do the land on the 6th of June. Sea was very rough, choppy, very, very rough. Although none of us were sick. I think the training with the beach landings previously had done us in good stead.
So you went across with the six spotters?
Yeah, in actual fact, we were a beach group then. We had the 2nd Hertfordshire Regiment and the 16th Durham Light Infantry, which made up the, you could say, an infantry assault brigade, plus the commando company.
Any other memories about the crossing?
Sorry?
Any other memories about the crossing?
The only thing was that it was so very, very rough. And I remember I hadn't really filled my water bottle up properly. And I must have sat there for about 2 hours waiting for the boat sort of tipping at the back to release the water from the tank, which, you know, was... Still, the main thing was I managed to fill the bottle up, because I think a lot of the water had been used previously. And then the next thing was the actual landing. All the seemed a semicircle of battleships and cruisers and one thing and another, rocket-firing ships, all pounding the beach. And you could see, as you went in, it was a sort of a mist, and the orange flashes in the distance, I should imagine it was hitting the target or whatever they were firing at, you know. Yes, and as we got near the coast, it really got pretty bad, you know, there was everything flying about. There was these, I forgot what they call them now, it was a sort of a... sort of cross girders with mines on the top. And the first chap I saw was a rubber-suited frogman with minus a leg laying on the beach. And of course there was lots of other debris, you know. We were very lucky, because we did have a shell ricochet under the boat, which was a flat-bottom boat. My friend, who I was with, we got about 5 yards up the beach, and he got hit. The round went across his back and turned into his shoulder. If it had been about another 10 inches high, I suppose it would have went through his neck, you know. Anyway, I got him along to the... We were using a German bunker, concrete bunker on the beach as a first aid post. I got him along there and came back, found the section. We were still pinned down. We were pinned down behind a jeep. Because what happened was there was a big concrete building, which I found out a couple of years ago that it had been a convalescent home for the German soldiers. And they had left a lot of snipers behind in the building. And they were having quite a good time, you know, these snipers. I remember we were still behind that jeep, and I could see onto the right of me was this high ground in the direction of Arromanches. And I could see a tank blazing in the distance, bodies round it, and this soldier, this I don't know what regiment he was in or what, a tank corps probably, I don't know, came up with his, he had a leather jerkin on which was smouldering, and as he got, I thought, you know, he don't know what he's doing, but when I got closer to him, I found that he had no face at all. It was just a balloon, just his, it must have been swelled up in the tank when he got hit, and of course the heat had blown his face up, you know, all the, and anyway, I got hold of him and took him back to the first aid post, you know, told him to keep his head down. I don't know if he heard us, but he did keep his head down a bit, you know. But and after that, we found out that I think it was a platoon of the DLI had gone in and cleared this this concrete building out of snipers. We had actually, we were more or less doing a mopping up job, because we came in at the side of the assault brigade from 50 Div, which was the 231 brigade. I thought it was a marvellous thing for the Durham Light Infantry, because that day on that section of beach, Gold Beach, they fielded four battalions. They had a whole brigade in the 50 Div, and they had a battalion with us.
What did your mopping up amount to?
Here and there, there was some of them just gave in. They just come out with their arms up, you know. Two or three were still having a go, and we had to get rid of them, like, you know, because a sniper can do a lot of damage, you know. And we gradually cleared the area, and by then I think the 50 Div's job was to take Bayeux, and I believe they got to the outskirts that evening, probably the outskirt, probably about a few miles from Bayeux. And then our job after that was to start getting organised, organise the beach, prepare for other troops coming in. If there had been a counter-attack, we would have had to take them on as a brigade. But everything went quite well.
What kind of preparations did you have to make on the beach for other groups coming in?
Well, we had the engineers with us who had been checking out for minefields, and then we had these flail tanks come in, pounding the beach for any other obstacles, you know, like, as I say, mines. And it was just one continuous, was just working away all the time, you know.
Did you just sleep in the sand?
Yes, we dug holes, and we did have a German plane come over and try and have a go at us, strafing the beach, but it didn't get very far because we had plenty of akak on the boats and that, you know, and some had come ashore.
Were you taking any casualties?
We had quite a few, yeah, but the casualties went back the same night. They were taken along to the pillbox, which was a first aid post, and then they were put on boats and they went home that day or that night.
Which company and platoon were you in at this
time? I was in A Company, 9th Platoon.
And do you remember any of the people who were with you from that unit?
Yeah, well, Bill Hammond, who I said, he was my mate, and he, as I say, he was killed up in Holland by a sniper. Yes, there was... the funny thing was, I forgot to tell you, the funny thing was, when we were jumping off the boat, or the landing craft, I should say, we had a small chap from Chorley in Lancashire, little Harry was, who quite a fiery temper on him and that, you know. We had another Geordie with us from Newcastle. We used to call him the professor because he could tell you any football team and what score was done and all the rest of it. And he could sniff out Tok H canteens wherever they were, you know. Quite an intelligent chap he was. Well, Harry jumped off first, okay, in the water, went up to near enough his armpits. Professor jumped off, and he was about 5'10", and he went under the water, which was a funny thing when you saw little Harry, you know, jump in the water all right. But I think Professor must have jumped in a hole, and we had to sort of jump out and pull him out there, you know, what with all the equipment and that on our backs.
Can you tell me more about these Tok H canteens?
Well, we didn't get a chance to go to many. I think Professor was the one who used to sort them out because he was always hungry. You know, he's one of those chaps who was always wanting something to eat.
What did a Tok H canteen consist of?
It just supplied tea and buns and this sort of thing, sort of refreshments, you know.
What do you remember happening to you next?
Well, as I say, we got the beaches cleared and that, and everything was going well. The only thing I remember was the Yanks coming down to the beach. They had run out of shells for the artillery, and we managed to supply them with some shells, you know, to keep them going. Because they was up on the other side of Arromanches, and it was just more. Well, I remember them bringing the Mulberry Harbour up, and they fixed the Mulberry Harbour and to get more supplies in. I remember the Ducks; they were doing a marvellous job carrying supplies in. There was sort of a boat come motor car. They had wheels on, and they could come in on the sea and then drive up the beach, distribute their load, and go back for more. But they were fantastic. And then I remember the storm which wrecked a lot of the Mulberry Harbour later on, which was treacherous, really blew up, proper storm, you know. But they managed to repair quite a bit of it, and you know, done quite a good job. Fantastic invention, really.
What's happened to you during the storm?
Well, we were still helping with supplies. We were more or less porters carrying the supplies up to lorries, and they were carrying them up to the front line. You know, food. There was these packs of rations and that, all in these cardboard boxes, and our job was to get them up to the line on these lorries, you know, load the lorries up and that. We're more or less labourers, but the time seemed to go very quick, though. You know, it was just constant all the time, and I remember one day I think it was about 500 bomber force came over to bomb Caen, because at the time the 3rd Infantry Division, which was on Sword Beach, they was held down at outside of Caen. I think they called it the Libezi Woods, and they were held there for quite some time. There's a lot of German resistance in Caen. And I remember these bombers droning over and dropping their bombs on Caen, you know, to try and clear the Germans out. But later on, 3rd Div did capture Caen. And when our job was finished, we were replaced by the Pioneer Corps, And they split the brigade up because other regiments had lost so many men, and you could volunteer to go in the commandos or airborne, but my platoon of the border regiment, we were sent to the King's Own Scottish Borderers, the 1st Battalion in the 3rd Infantry Division.